Hello and welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, a program which is dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. Hello, my name is Mark Amata Pinkham. I'm going to be your host on this show. The Guardians of the Holy Grail has been created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions regarding the Holy Grail mysteries, the Knights Templars, the Freemasons, and other secret societies that are currently floating around the internet and within certain academic and lay circles. I hope through this show to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templars and the other secret societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Templars, which over the centuries have been either lost or ignored. Our Gnostic Knight Templar organization is both a mystical order, wherein we practice both alchemy and gnosis, as well as a research organization, which is dedicated to finding the truth behind the mysteries of the Knights Templars and the secret societies. Now, you can learn more about us, our Gnostic Templar organization, at www.gnostictemplars.org. And I'd encourage you all to visit there and sign up for our monthly e-newsletter so you keep abreast of what is happening. On today's show, we'll be speaking with a member of the Rosicrucians. The Rosicrucians have been one of the secret societies that have been preserved over the years. They've preserved the Gnostic alchemical path, just as we Gnostic Templars have. The Rosicrucians have been one of the many alchemical sects that have adopted the rose or rose cross as their symbol and thus become sub rosa, or which means they've existed under the symbol of the rose, which in many alchemical secret societies of Europe, the rose, the cross, are alchemical symbols. Now, because of our connection to the Gnostic alchemical path, we Knight Templars were once also known as Knights of the Rose Cross or Knights of the Rose. As I've mentioned in previous shows, one thing we're trying to do is reunite all the secret societies, Sub Rosa, Freemason, all of them, under one banner, which we're going to be calling the World Alliance for Planetary Enlightenment. The first of our conferences that we're going to do this will be next April 17th, 18th in Italy. And we're inviting delegates from all the secret societies all over the world to come to this amazing conference. It'll be the first of its kind for the last 200 years, where we will all come together. One reason we want to do it now is so we can remind everybody why we were even formed in ancient times, which was to guard over this Gnostic alchemical tradition. Well, we don't need to be secretive about it anymore. Now is the time to take it out into the world, to share it with everybody, because now is the time we really need it. And so we want to create a network and an alliance of all secret societies so that we can do this together. Now, in the meantime, through this show, we're going to be covering many of the secret societies, what they're all about, and their history, and what they're up to these days. Today we're going to be talking about the Rosicrucians. And our guest is a member of the Rosicrucian known as Amorc, the ancient and mystical order of Rosicrucis. Amorc is one of many Rosicrucian orders in the world today, which have their origins among the ancient Sub Rosa sects of Europe. Amorc is currently headquartered in San Jose, California, although it has groups that meet, come together all over the world, I guess. Now, if you want to know more about Amorc, you can visit their website at www.rosicrucian.org. Now, our guest today is Stephen Armstrong, who's a member of Amorc. He's Amorc's research librarian, as well as the manager of Amorc's local groups that meet around North America and the Caribbean. Stephen also assists with publications of Amorc and serves on the ritual team at the Grand Temple for Rosicrucian and Martinist work. His current research interests include the links that unite Eastern Christianity, Rosicrucianism, shamanic and earth-based spirituality, and the divine feminine in all her manifestations. So he's definitely one of us. He's working to create that link and discover that link that unites us all. So welcome, Stephen. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Thank you. It's very nice to be with you today.
Well, we have a number of questions for you. I know a little bit about your history, and I know that your founder was Harvey Spencer Lewis, who has actually been quite a prolific writer. So he's easy to find out about and to read his works.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he, according to what I understand, he was initiated into the Rosicrucians in France. Can you speak about who his initiators were at that time?
Well, certainly. Actually, we are celebrating the 100th anniversary this year of that event when H. Spencer Lewis followed a trail that he'd sort of been pointed toward and went to Toulouse. And was initiated. The names of the initiators were kept secret, which is, of course, natural. We do know that there was a gentleman by the name of Belcastle Ligne who was involved, and there are some other names that we have, been working on. But naturally, it was an initiatic society at that time. In the early 20th century, things were still quite secretive in that regard. But really, what they did was, in initiating him, they gave him a mandate to bring the Rosicrucian work back to North America. It had been here twice before, in Carmel and in the early 1600s, and then in Pennsylvania, of course, in the late 1600s and through the revolutionary period, the colonial period. But to bring it back to the Americas and to re-manifest it, you might say, in a way that modern women and men would be able to understand and have access to. And so it really was a step of opening the tradition to a wide range of people who perhaps had not had access to it before. So it's quite a step.
So the initiators were secretive. I know that Lewis, in his history of the Rosicrucians, he traces it back to Thutmose III of Egypt. Were the initiators somehow aligned with this Egyptian lineage?
Well, that's our traditional lineage. So certainly, as you know, the Rosicrucian history goes back to the early 1600s with the publication of the manifestos under the term Rosicrucian, as you mentioned in your introduction, and probably a little bit before that. The term, as you mentioned, the rose and the cross, have been used in many mystical societies, and in particular in the Rosicrucian, which is what Rosicrucian means. But then going back under many names, many guys, as you might say, including the Templars, the Alchemists, Gnostics, etc., the tradition goes back, the tradition that is embodied in the Rose Cross and the Rosicrucian work, we trace by tradition back to the 18th dynasty of Egypt with the foundation by Thutmose III and Hatshepsut. And this took place when they united the priesthoods. They were co-rulers, co-pharaohs, and they united the priesthoods of Egypt into a single order and placed Hatshepsut's vizier over that priesthood. And that became, we traced then, that foundation of a single order to be the fountain of the Rosicrucian work. Because, of course, when the priesthoods were united, that meant that the houses of life, the Père Ankou, were also united. And the houses of life were the study chambers, you might say, connected to each temple. And that's where the tradition was passed on from master to student. That was really where the mysteries were studied.
Well, can you tell me briefly then where that path went to, what lineage it came down between Thutmose III and Harvey Spencer Lewis?
Well, the Egyptian mysteries themselves, of course, were Hellenized with the Corpus Hermeticum and the writings attributed to Hermes Trismegistus. And through that means, and also through Gnosticism and through Neoplatonism, which is also probably the origin, same time as the origin of Kabbalah, through all of these means, the Rosicrucian tradition, what we call the Rosicrucian tradition today, was transmitted also through esoteric Christianity, mystical Judaism, and later mystical Islam, Sufism, etc. So through all of these means, the tradition moves throughout North Africa, the Middle East, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, etc. These currents continued, you might say, sort of underground, just because, of course, the power structures of the day were not always favorable to them. But through the various mystery schools of the ancient world, through what are sometimes called the mystery cults, but no bad meaning for the term cult there, this tradition continued and was carried on, especially, let's say, for instance, through the alchemists, through the mystics, etc., who moved sort of under the radar, you might say, into various societies and, you know, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, etc. And so it is that tradition that then was crystallized in the early 1600s with the publication of the Fama Fraternitatis and the Confessio Fraternitatis and the Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreutz into an order such as we would, you know, think of it today with officers, etc. Now, not necessarily exactly the way in which we have it today, but became visible because it was needed in Western Europe at the time. And very clearly, it was also a synthesis of Eastern and Western wisdom, as the legend of Christian Rosenkreutz points out, that is described in the Fama and the Confessio, since he journeys to the mythical city of Fez in order to learn from the masters who've gathered from all over the world. So that is, and then that tradition goes throughout Western Europe, and as I said, came to North America twice before, influenced the founding fathers, certainly of the United States, and then in a period when it was rather quiescent, not quite dormant, but in a period when it was simply being handed on in family circles and such as that in southern France, that was the contact that Harvey Spencer Lewis made and was initiated by the descendants of that tradition.
Well, I think it's interesting when the Fama and the Confessio came out and announced the presence of the Rosicrucians in Europe, it talked about this, you know, this history of Christian Rosenkreutz going to North Africa and the Middle East. But it's interesting, it didn't say anything about the lineage or the history in Egypt. And I haven't actually found it in any other Rosicrucian tradition. So, I mean, can you explain why that is?
Well, that's an insight that was passed on to H. Spencer Lewis by his initiators. And, I mean, I don't have the documents that were given to him, the information that was given to him. But from the beginning of this round of Rosicrucian work, that has been our understanding, that the continuity, continuity of ideas, continuity of tradition stretches back to ancient Egypt. I think it really is the sense of the primordial tradition that underlies all of human work. And of course, as modern research is showing now, the Egyptians were not, isolated. What they had seems to have also come to them from Central Asia. There was a as well as their own original work. But there is a confluence of the world's, of world spiritual traditions, which was much greater than I think scholars have sometimes, you know, given credit for. These cultures were, did not operate in isolation, and they cross-fertilized one another, especially with regard to spiritual traditions. And so it's quite natural that the traditions of the Rosicrucian Order, while, of course, you know, in the manifestos of 1614, 1615, 1616, are not Egypt-centered, this tradition clearly is part of the primordial tradition which underlies all of human history.
Well, us Templars trace the Egyptian influence or Egyptian information that we received through the Sufis. We had a lot of interaction with the Sufi orders during our time in the Middle East. So could you also say the same thing, that your Egyptian information also came via the Sufis?
Well, partly. I mean, I'm sure that, in other words, all of that is something that is of interest and part, what we consider part of the lineage of the Rosicrucian tradition. We're currently publishing a series of Rosicrucian digests over about a 10-year period now, with elements of the Rosicrucian tradition, elements that feed into the Rosicrucian tradition. So, for instance, we have a volume on ancient Egypt, we have a volume on the Essenes, a volume on the Pythagoreans, the Orphic mysteries, and right now we're preparing our volume on the Eleusinian mysteries. So all of these are tributaries, you might say, that in one way or another are manifested in the Rosicrucian Order Amwork today.
Do you, in your history, can you identify any past connections that the Rosicrucians have with Knights Templar?
Well, we don't, you know, we certainly don't claim to be a literal continuation of the Knights Templar. However, the ideals that as we understand them, and certainly as I understand them as a historian, the ideals of the Knights Templar of bringing together world spiritualities, of going to the heart, quite literally the heart of spirituality, where one meets all others of like-minded heart from other traditions, that certainly is embodied in the Rosicrucian tradition. And in particular, as you mentioned, there is in the legend of Christian Rosenkreutz that strong connection with the Middle East, and with the Middle East being a sort of nexus where East and West meet. And so that certainly is embodied in the Rosicrucian tradition. We are clearly a Western order, and yet there is wisdom from the East that is also embodied and manifested in the Rosicrucian order. So I think certainly in that sense, we hope that we manifest the best ideals of the Templars.
Well, I know that in some histories, and the Prior of Sion being one, some Freemasonic histories, they actually trace it back to an early Rosicrucian, Oremus. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He was a Gnostic adept in Alexandria, and
yes.
He apparently founded the Order of the Rose Cross at that time. Do you also link up with him and his tradition?
I have certainly read the accounts of that, and, you know, that is not part of academic history, but it's part of traditional history, and it may well be that that was an early use of the term Rose Cross. I mean, as you know, the cross is, of course, one of the oldest symbols of humanity, I believe. It was originally a sun symbol, an equal armed cross inscribed in a circle. For us, of course, the Egyptians used the Ankh cross. for us, the cross is the symbol of a human person with their arms outstretched, and the rose is the unfoldment of human personality from one lifetime to the next. So it's a, you know, it's certainly a very, very ancient symbol. And so if in fact, you know, this was used in Alexandria, it would be no surprise. It, of course, also, as the public is finding out from Dan Brown's new book, the Rose Cross is also the unfoldment of the cube that is the symbol of the created cosmos, the manifested cosmos. And the dot is then elaborated as the rose, the center of the source.
Well, do you find in your tradition that way back when in Egyptian times that the rose cross was also a symbol back then during the time of Tutmosis or Akhenaten?
We have not, at least not my researchers or in any material that I've read, I have not seen a literal rose cross. We do actually have in our museum a cross from probably the Coptic period of Egypt. We do have it's a limestone cross that does have a floral symbol, kind of a sunburst floral symbol at the center. It is, I wouldn't claim that it was literally a rose, five-petaled rose as we think of it symbolically today. But it is interesting that, you know, that cross and does have a floral pattern at the center. So it may be that there was the germ of that idea that was already present in ancient Egypt.
Well, when the Rosicrucians announced their presence with the Fama and the Confessio, and then the alchemical marriage came along, it definitely appeared as though at the heart of Rosicrucianism was alchemy. And so my
yes.
question to you is, are you following that tradition? Are you practicing alchemists in a morgue?
There certainly are practicing alchemists in the Rosicrucian Order and morgue. There's no question about that. Primarily, we work on what is called spiritual alchemy. That is to say, the transformation, the transmutation of oneself, that is the primary work, the primary way that alchemy manifests in our studies and in our work, because we certainly do a considerable amount of that. However, there are alchemists who do the physical alchemy. And in fact, we are preparing a museum, an exhibit, and we'll have what we will call a museum of alchemy here at Rosicrucian Park over the next few years. We are preparing an exhibit for that new display. So alchemy, physical alchemy, has never been absent from the Rosicrucian work. And of course, as you know, the symbols and emblems of alchemy are extremely important to the Rosicrucians. We published the book Secret Symbols of the Rosicrucians, which has that, a beautiful display of alchemical emblems. So both types of alchemy are certainly very much present today in the Rosicrucian Order.
Well, what I understand in your history, Harvey Spencer Lewis, through some exhibition in, I think, in New York, he was able to actually manifest alchemical gold. So apparently he knew the secret of it. Has he passed on the secret to other members of a morgue?
Well, not to me, but yes, that is a remarkable and, documented event that took place. There were people there who saw it. And I have no doubt that, his close confreres, I mean, he must have shared that with someone. He didn't, it's not somewhere here in the library that I can look up. But I do not know the literal answer to that question, but it stands to reason that he probably would have shared that with someone. Of course, as you know, the production of gold is merely a demonstration. True alchemy is a symbol of the great work, which is the restoration of all things, bringing together everything that's been manifested with its source. However you conceive that to be, God, the cosmic grand architect of the universe, whatever, you know, whatever language you use to express the source of all things. So alchemy, physical alchemy, is a means to an end, and it's an outer symbol of inner work that is being done.
Well, are there today, are there crucifixes that are trying to still create alchemical gold like Harvey Spencer Lewis did, that you know of?
I do know, I don't know whether they're trying to create alchemical gold or not, but I do know that there are practicing physical alchemists, practical alchemists. One Friday, a good friend of mine, I believe he's up in Colorado now, is quite expert at alchemical processes, etc. I've never asked him if he made gold or not. I haven't inquired, but there are people. I mean, there's no question that there are Rosicrucians who are engaged in the actual physical practice of alchemy, and as I say, we are preparing an exhibit which will talk about both physical and spiritual alchemy.
Well, what practices do you teach within a more of spiritual alchemy?
Well, the course of study of Rosicrucian Order Amorque is a very carefully step by step, a very careful step by step progress, in which one learns first of all techniques of concentration and ability to meditate. And then building on that, one begins the process of getting to know oneself on all levels of physical, psychic, and spiritual. And in that process, gradually coming to be able to unlock the potential of being that is ours as human beings on all of those different levels. And so there are various techniques that are taught to the members, because really the purpose of the studies is literally know thyself and thou shalt know the universe and the gods. It is not believing what someone else has taught you, but rather it's coming to know for yourself what you find out to be true for yourself. And so we assist members in learning how to transmute the base elements of their own personality into, if you will, gold, of being able to, act as better people, not only greater abilities, I mean, that's just a stepping stone, but really becoming a better person for the benefit of the self, for the benefit of the planet. And as I say, the larger goal is, of course, cosmic communion, union with the source of all. And so there are many different procedures that one goes through in order to be able to transmute oneself into union with the higher self, the one source.
Can you trace back these spiritual alchemical practices that you teach back to Europe, the Sufis, Egypt, to the yoga practices of India? Do you know the origins of them?
All of the above is really what we are talking about. In other words, this is the common heritage of humanity. The Rosicrucian Order has never claimed, and certainly would never claim, that we are the only game in town. You know, we are a manifestation of the primordial tradition, which has all of those tributaries in it. And so, when one, there's no one source. It is a distillation, you might say, to use another alchemical concept. It's a distillation of the common heritage of mysticism of humanity that has come down through these various streams and is put together in a remarkably ordered and step-by-step, you know, a progressive path so that people can understand it. I mean, you know, if you tried to learn all of this through simply coming to a library and trying to read every book on every subject, it would take several lifetimes, and you would not get the practical effect that one has in this kind of a graded a program of study. So really, I think that's one of the chief benefits of the Rosicrucian path of study, is that it's kind of distilled the wisdom of the ages so that a person can actually make use of it.
How big's your membership, and do you have members all over the world?
We do, actually. Here in North America, in the Americas, our jurisdiction is the English language jurisdiction for the Americas. And we generally, I believe we have approximately 8,000 members at the moment, if I'm not mistaken. The headquarters here in San Jose is the headquarters for the North American English language jurisdiction. We are an international organization with 19 jurisdictions around the world. There is no single world headquarters. Rather, what happens is that every year, the Imperator, Christian Bernard, and the Grand Masters and Administrators of the various jurisdictions meet together. And when they meet, that is the Supreme Grand Lodge. But there is no physical building that is the headquarters. It's a, you might say it's a sense of the egregore, the whole coming together is the Supreme Grand Lodge. And they are the officers of the Supreme Grand Lodge. Then each Grand Lodge around the world runs its own affairs. So we have three English language jurisdictions, two Spanish language jurisdictions, and then jurisdictions for a number of other geographic and language groups. So we're quite diverse.
Right. So today, who's the head of AMORC, and how did he get elected to that position?
That was Christian Bernard. He's not the heart surgeon. It's a different Christian Bernard. Christian Bernard, who served as the Grand Master for the French jurisdiction, and he was elected by the Supreme Board. And it is an elected position, as a position to Grand Master, et cetera. And so he was elected by the Supreme Board and has been serving for some time now. He actually resides in Normandy and has his offices at the headquarters of the French Grand Lodge, which is at the Château d'Aumonville in Normandy. It was actually featured on, I think, an episode of the Great, was it one of those scavenger hunt shows on television where they have to follow clues, and they actually had one of the episodes where they ended up at the Château d'Aumonville. It's a lovely location, and it's so it would correspond to our location here in San Jose.
And so, how did he get elected to that position? What distinguished him? Did he have to work his way up through various levels in the organization?
Yes, he's been a lifelong member of the Rosicrucian Order. He actually joined. He got special permission to join before his 18th birthday. His family was Rosicrucian, and so he began studying very, very early, and served in many different positions, and served for many years as the Grand Master of the French jurisdiction. And so it was a pretty natural step. And for him to be elected, he had been in service to the order all his life, really.
Are there many levels that a member can progress through within the order?
Well, in our studies, we progress through the temple degrees. The first 16 months of membership is called the Neophyte section, and in that time one touches on all of the subjects that are going to be studied in the 9 temple degrees. Then after that, one progresses through the 9 temple degrees of the studies, each one dedicated to various subject matter. That is the essential core of the Rosicrucian tradition and work. And then there are advanced degrees, free advanced degrees that continue in studies for a long time. The corresponding to each one of those degrees, that work in a local group is not mandatory. Many Rosicrucians study at home, and that's their contact with the order. However, for those who wish, we do have temple initiations which correspond to each one of the degrees, and they're quite inspiring fraternal rituals, fraternal not in the sense of male, but sense of the community of the order. Excuse me. And members are quite welcome to receive those initiations either here at the Grand Lodge or at any one of the lodge temples throughout our jurisdiction, or throughout the world, actually.
And so who's making the decisions as to, you know, who should be raised to the next level or not?
Well, it really isn't a decision-making process. Moving through the degrees is a process of study. And so one progresses through the studies and then becomes eligible for each of those degrees. And one reaps from the study what one puts into it. So, if a person just simply reads the material and doesn't do anything with it, that's their loss. No one is standing over them making them do something. Now, that's separate from the administrative posts. We have various administrative posts. The Grand Masters are appointed by the Imperator and the Supreme Board. And then the Grand Masters themselves appoint various associates to assist them in running particular jurisdiction, Grand Counselors, regional monitors, etc. So those are appointed positions or elected positions that it doesn't exactly correspond to where one is in the studies. The studies are a bit more of a personal progression, whereas the administrative positions obviously are chosen on the basis of whether one is a good administrator or not. And certainly, of course, loyalty to the order, et cetera.
Well, over the centuries, there's been a lot of Rosicrucian sects that apparently arisen here and there. And their relationship at times has not always been friendly, sometimes contentious. I understand Harvey Spencer Lewis was in kind of a contentious relationship with a guy named Clymer, who started a Rosicrucian order in Pennsylvania as an example, right? And so my question is, have you been able to resolve some of these conflicts? And has there been any kind of movement in order to kind of bring you all together as one united Rosicrucian organization?
Yeah. No, there's no – I don't think there's any movement toward that, nor any particular desire to do so. We operate under the concept of the broadest tolerance under the strictest independence. And so, at least as far as I know, any, bad blood that exists any longer, et cetera. That was an unfortunate period. I've read something of that, the great battle between Mr. Clymer and H. Spencer Lewis, and very unfortunate, somewhat typical of the times, one might say. But I think the histories, like the histories of the Rosicrucian Order, deal with that pretty fairly. And I don't know what Mr. Clymer's motivations were, but certainly we're not in any kind of you know, controversy with any other group that uses the term Rosicrucian today. The term Rosicrucian is far too old to copyright, and so anyone can use it. And as you mentioned, there are other groups that have quite different takes on what it means to be Rosicrucian. So we simply are faithful to our vision that was handed on to us through the affiliation of the Toulouse Rosicrucians, and our job is to be the best at that we can possibly be. And we do not throw stones at anybody else, and we don't comment on other groups or, you know, their take on Rosicrucianism, et cetera. You know, let them be who they are, and we are who we are. And, you know, it whatever we're doing, we're doing something well. We are the largest Rosicrucian order in the world, and you know, it seems that we're able to serve society. So that's what we're doing.
Well, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that all the secret societies were formed to be the guardians of the Gnostic alchemical path, as Rosicrucianism was. What would you say about now joining together, bringing together all the various secret societies to network, to come together as an alliance, so that together we can collectively spread this Gnostic alchemical wisdom around the planet? What would you say to that?
Well, certainly I'm not a decision maker at that level of what the order might or might not do. I will say that we are having a conference actually, July 22nd to 25th of 2010, called Hidden in Plain Sight. It is the effect of esoteric societies on the modern world. And we have members from many different, esoteric groups that are participating in that, and we certainly welcome everyone. The call for papers actually is for proposals for papers is October 1st of this year, and but if anyone has a late paper that they want to send in or a proposal, certainly be very welcome to send it to me at the Rosicrucian Research Library for consideration. So we are that's an outreach that we are doing presently to work with other groups in a cooperative fashion. As you probably know as well, the Rosicrucian Order was one of the, if I'm not mistaken, founding members of the Fidoci, which was a kind of organization that you're speaking of, which while each of the groups remained independent, they did come together for a number of years in Europe, and, you know, shared things that were of interest to them, and assisted one another. So, you know, there has been that sort of work in the past with esoteric groups, and who knows what the future may bring. The Rosicrucian Order is certainly, while maintaining its own, you know, strict independence, is certainly open seeing what you know, the new century may bring. So, you know, very interesting hearing about anything that might be happening in that regard. The other thing, it's very interesting, the term secret societies is, you know, we sort of laugh about that in the sense that we have a full city block of Egyptian buildings here in San Jose. We're not doing a very good job of saying secret. And Dan Brown's new novel, I believe that there's a line in there asking if the Freemasons are a secret society, and the response is no, they're a society that has secrets.
Right. I'll just use that term because that's what people can relate to at this point. We're not anymore.
Sure.
None of us are.
That's right, with websites and everything else. So I think it's you know, the greater openness, the greater spirit of openness is a great thing, and we're happy. We are quite open. Much of our web work is open to the public, you know, our publications, our podcasts. We have daily meditations in the temple open to the public, our Council of Solace, and on Tuesday evenings. So there's a, you know, there's a great deal of openness that is taking place, and certainly are interested in hearing about, you know, whatever might be forthcoming.
Well, if I was to extend an invitation to Amorc to send a representative to one of our conferences that I mentioned, do you think that you would be open to that?
Well, I mean, I am not a decision maker at that level, but you are certainly very welcome, and we're very happy to receive an invitation. And then, you know, that will be decided on other levels than the research librarian's desk. But, you know, I certainly would appreciate, I know that I would appreciate getting an invitation like that. I mean, that, you know, it's always good to be invited.
So would I send the invitation to you, and then you'd pass it on to someone else?
I would be happy to receive that.
Okay, excellent, excellent.
And then I would pass that along.
Great. Well, let's. If people want to get involved with Amorc, what is the best way to go about it? Visit the website?
Probably the best first step is to go to www.rosicrucian.org. And or if the person is not in North America or the Americas or does not speak English, they can go to amorc.org for our international site. That's really the best thing, because there the seeker will be able to read a description of the course of study, the benefits of membership, et cetera, and actually, if they want to, apply for membership online. Also, at that site are completely free and available our publications, the Rose Quad Journal, which is a peer-reviewed international journal, and then also the Rosicrucian Digest, as I had mentioned, which is currently in our Mystery Schools of Rosicrucian Timeline series. Those are fully available online. And then also we have podcast series, we have video series, et cetera, all free and available online. So a lot of resources are available there to the public to learn more about the order. And then if a person is so moved, they can apply to join. And then, of course, there are some members-only resources as well. We do have a large number of local groups around North America and the Caribbean. And on that page also, on that website, you'd find the directory of where to contact local Rosicrucians in each person's area. And also, if there is no Rosicrucian activity, either members or seekers are welcome to form a discussion group, Rosicrucian discussion group in their area, and we, the library, have guidelines and resources for that.
Well, I'm sure that the audience would like to know one more thing.
Certainly.
How long have you been a Rosicrucian, and you know, what's been your experience in the organization?
Certainly. I joined the order in 1998. I had done, you know, mystical and spiritual work all my life, and so I came to the order a little bit late in life, you might say, but have found it to be, what I really found was that it helped to organize, in my mind, all of the work that I had done previously, so that it sort of brought together and synthesized what I had done in the past together with, you know, new information, new techniques, et cetera, but gave it that focus, sort of the meta-knowledge, you might say, that's kind of underneath the organizing principle, underneath the work that I had been doing. And since it is not a religion, it doesn't impose any code belief on its members, the order is a wonderful place to be able to just explore and be who you are while being part of a great, you know, fellowship of women and men around the world who are doing the same thing. We call it the egregore. It's, I guess, some social scientists would call it a morphic field, but it's a great place to be able to continue to explore, to go within to listen to that small, still voice in one's heart. And certainly I found it very, very positive, very enriching, on the, you know, for my own, development.
How have you experienced your own spiritual development as a Rosicrucian?
Well, I think the primary thing that I have found over the years, is that when one is working at the level of the heart, one meets there the initiates of all the other traditions. It's at the level of the heart where all world spiritual traditions can come together. And that is certainly something which is near and dear to the spirit of Rosicrucianism. We emerged in Europe at a time, and we emerged under the term Rosicrucian, at a time when Western Europe was tearing itself apart because of religion. And it is a sense of saving spirituality from that warfare of partisan, you know, religiosity. We honor all world spiritual traditions. We don't endorse anyone as the spiritual tradition of the planet. The wonderful diversity of human spirituality is delightful, and we support that. And I think that it really, for me, that is a key and core insight, which is bolstered by the Rosicrucian tradition, that the spirit, you know, God, whatever you want to, however you call that, is at the heart, is in at the level of the heart. And so when Sufis or Templars or Rosicrucians or Buddhists or Christians or Jews, you know, whoever it is, when each of us is working at the level of the heart, we're in communion with the all and with everyone else who is at that level as well.
Well, in your prayers and meditations, you and other members of Amoric, you call upon any ascended masters, guides, teachers, to assist you in your spiritual development?
Well, certainly we acknowledge that there are those who are helping and guiding the world and humanity in progress. But it's not like a system of saints or something like that. Because for each Rosicrucian, we are taught to access what we call the master within, that connection that each of us has to the divine, however one, you know, considers the divine to be. So it isn't as if you have, like, you know, ascended masters as patron saints or something like that, to whom you, you know, go for help or something like that. Rosicrucians are really taught to be very self-reliant, while acknowledging that, yes, I mean, there are the great, you know, the great illumined ones, like, you know, the Christ, the Buddha, and of course, you know, the esoteric orders, you know, have a number of figures that are mentioned as helping to guide, humanity. And so, you know, that presence is very much understood. And when we think of the egregore, this group, this morphic field, it includes those who are not, on this plane of existence, but are helping to guide things and assisting. But that's all very much up to the individual, I mean, to unite themselves to that great work, which is ultimately the restoration of all things, the apocatastasis, you know, the bringing back of everything to its source. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I don't go to sleep at night saying a prayer to H. Spencer Lewis, for instance, you know, but I'm sure that, you know, he's quite happy with the work that's being done, you know, from his foundation.
And so I assume that you accept into the order anybody of any particular creed or past religious affiliation, whether they're Christians or Jews or Muslims. You welcome all of them.
Absolutely, religious affiliation or lack thereof is of absolutely no consequence in joining the order. most people who are religious find that it enhances the experience of their own faith practices to be a Rosicrucian, because one then begins to see, as certainly in my own situation, one sees the esoteric meaning behind many of the religious practices, and it enhances one's experience rather than causes any kind of difficulty. So there, no one asks you what faith tradition you belong to or came from, et cetera, in joining the order, and nor would one ever. Everyone is welcome.
So does Amorik have any future plans for any kind of more future expansion around the planet?
Well, we're continuing to grow, we have our heavy internet presence, which is bringing in new members. And, we continue to grow in membership. A number of the other Grand Lodges are expanding their physical plants at their headquarters. I know that in Mexico, in Guanajuato and León, they are creating their own Rosicrucian park there. There's a large center in Curitiba in Brazil, which is actually our largest jurisdiction. The Portuguese jurisdiction is our largest jurisdiction. And we're going to be having a world convention there in Curitiba in 2011. I believe they're building a university, if I'm not mistaken. Grand Lodges around the world are doing well. As far as I know, membership is increasing, and we're getting the word out by means of publications and internet more effectively, I think, than we've been able to before. H. Spencer Lewis, of course, was always a man very interested in the latest means of communication. That was his mandate that he received from Toulouse, is to communicate in a way that modern people can understand. And, I mean, he was a pioneer, had his own radio show. He would be, I mean, if he were here on this plane of existence today, I mean, he'd be on Facebook, like we are today. He'd be on Facebook, he'd be on Twitter, both of which we have a presence on. He'd be on the internet, constantly. So we very much believe that we are following in his vision and inspired by his interest. We're really moving forward in the 21st century and finding very good effects from that.
Well, is December 21st, 2012 going to be an important date for you all?
Well, that's very interesting. I'm giving a talk actually in November in our convention in Oklahoma City about these things in the cycles. We don't have an official position on that, but it's clear that it's the end of one Mayan calendar cycle and therefore the beginning of the next one. And I think it's emblematic for us that we are in a time of transition, whether you talk about the transition from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius or the Greek system from the Iron Age to the next Golden Age. I mean, we're in a period of turmoil and transition. And it's our job to be working so that transition moves in the direction of the light for the betterment of humanity, the betterment of our planet, progress, et cetera. So I think there's tremendous hope and there's tremendous longing for us to move to a better way of doing things in our world, on all levels. We published the fourth manifesto in 2000 called the Positio Futuritatis, and that's available on the website. And that outlines Rosicrucian thought about many of the current issues of the day, et cetera. And outlines the way in which we, suggest that progress can be made. So that is available free on the internet on our webpage. So there are actually four manifestos now.
So you don't really have prophecies per se about new ages arriving in the future or the near future?
No, not prophecies as such, but clearly one of the early influences in Rosicrucian work was the theory of the ages that was in Simon Studion's Neometria, an important esoteric document. In that formulation, which comes from Joachim of Fiore, 12th century, monk. And he has an interesting theory. He said there were three ages, the age of the Father, the age of the Son, and then the age of the Spirit, following the Christian, Trinitarian theology. But for him, the age of the Spirit would be when men and women would have unfettered and direct access to the divine without the intervention of priests or kings. Now, as you can imagine, the priests and kings didn't like that very much, but that was quite influential on early Rosicrucian thinkers, and say through the medium of the Neometria of Simon Studion. And I think that is what we are, in general, it's what we are looking at, is that mysticism, which is, of course, the practice of direct experience of the divine, that mysticism becomes much more common and much more practiced by the ordinary person and the good effects that will have. And this is no denigration to organized religion. But within organized religion, of course, there are many mystics themselves. And so I think that's really what is beginning to take place, is that there is a democratization of mysticism, which H. Spencer Lewis was really a pioneer, in that way. And that will transform the world. So
I don't want to cut you off, Stephen, but I have to.
Okay. I understand. And, we have time.
And we're all on the same page here. We all believe that now is the time that we have moved into a new age, and this is what these shows are all about now, to talk about it and what our next step is going to be. But anyway, you've revealed a lot about Rosicrucianism and Amorque, and we really appreciate you coming on the show today, Stephen. It's really been a pleasure to have you, and thank you so much for sharing your information with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me, and I look forward to hearing from you and working with you in the future.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be in touch with you, so
very
be
good.
Prepared.
All right. Well, take care.
And the rest of you out there, thank you also for being here today with the show, and come back again next week. We'll have equally interesting, fascinating material, same time, same place. And in the meantime, have a wonderful week. And don't forget that the Holy Grail is always right inside of you. Bye for now.